yes, yes, yes. Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Have a good night, y'all, and have a good morning, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Big ups to KK47, Now Fort, Herbie Joseph, and Insight Photography.
Yes, yes. Yes, yes.
Peace, y'all.
Peace.
The 2015 Public Service Champions of Change Forum will take place on Thursday, April 30th at 7 p.m. You will meet financial reform guru Barney Frank, co-author of the Dodd-Frank Bill, and other experts on climate sustainability, income equality, healthcare reform, and civil rights, on the role of the true public servant. This special event is sponsored by WBAI supporter, the New York Society for Ethical Culture. For ticket information, go to nysec.org. That's the 2015 Public Service Champion of Change Forum, April 30th, 7 p.m. For information, go to nysec.org.
Free Mumia, free Mumia, from the hands of the Dompress.
This is Lynn Stewart. The life of brilliant journalist, intellectual, and political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal is in great danger. On March 30th, Mumia went into diabetic shock and was hospitalized with life-threatening high blood sugar. Just 2 days later, he was transferred back to the same prison that failed to diagnose or treat him. His diet is dangerous and his health is deteriorating. Only massive pressure will stop his execution through malpractice. Call Pennsylvania Corrections Secretary John Wetzel at 717-728-4109. Demand that Mumia be allowed treatment by specialists of his choosing, the proper diabetic diet, and daily visits by family, friends, and attorneys. For more, go to bringmumiahome.com.
Come join us, Alan Seinfeld and myself, the Mob, as we co-host the 9th annual World Peace Earth Day celebration, Thursday, April 23rd, from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. A conscious community gathering with 7 world leaders having a panel discussion. There will be indigenous ceremonies, live performances, and community participation. That's Thursday, April 23rd from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. at St. John's Lutheran Church, 81 Christopher Street near 7th Avenue. Doors open at 6 p.m. with a 6:30 pre-show. For tickets and info, go to www.planetheart.org. That's www.planetheart.org. Or email info@planetheart.org. Come on down.
Hi, this is James Irsay. This Friday, April 17th at 10 a.m. on WBAI, Morning Ursay features a centennial celebration of French pianist Monique de la Bruchellerie with a 2-hour tribute in words and music. Our co-host will be talented scholar of historical French pianism Frédéric Gossin, live from Paris. Madame de la Bruchellerie would have been 100 years old this April 20th. We'll be previewing soon-to-be-released live recordings of Madame de la Bruchellerie on a Mellow Classic label, selected by Frederick and Madame de la Bruchellerie's daughter Diane. Join us this Friday at 10 a.m. for a centennial celebration of Monique de la Bruchellerie on WBAI 99.5 FM and on the web at stream.wbai.org.
are listening to Earth at Midnight. And I am Catherine, in studio with...
Paulette.
And we'll be back in just a moment. We have some special sharing, entertainment, more music. Stay tuned for a really cool evening.
Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists.
Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world. Unlike 9 out of 10 people, your mind is irrepressible, and this threatens authority. And it wants them eliminated. So your whole life you've been told your strengths were weaknesses. Now I'm telling you otherwise. Your impulsivity is a gift. Impulses are your key to the miraculous. Your distractibility is an artifact of your inspired creativity. Your mood swings reflect the natural pulse of life. They give you unstoppable energy when you're high and deep soulful insight when you're low. Diagnosed with a disorder, that's society's latest way to deny its own illness by pointing the finger at you. Your addictive personality is just a symptom of your vast, underused capacity for heroic creative expression and spiritual connection. Your utter lack of repression, your wide-eyed idealism, your unmitigated open mind. Didn't anyone ever tell you?
Some as the will of God, divine providence, the Holy Spirit, the implicate order, the Tao, reverse entropy, life force, but for now, we'll simply call it the way. The way is reflected in you as the source of your inspiration, the source of your passions, your wisdom, your enthusiasm, your intuition, your spiritual fire, love. Society begs you to ignore it. The way stirs you inside.
depression blocks most people's awareness of the way. Censoring all thoughts and impulses from the unconscious is their prefrontal cortex, the Gestapo of the brain. Nothing which violates its socialized programming even gets through. But your mind is different. Your mind has been cracked wide open to the way by some miraculous genetic trait, some psychotropic chemical, or maybe even by the will of your own soul. Your brain's reward pathways have been hijacked. Dopamine employed to overthrow the fascist dictatorship of your prefrontal cortex. Now your brain is free of repression. Your mind free of censorship. Your awareness exposed to the turbulent seas of the unconscious. Through this open doorway, divine light shines into your consciousness, showing you the way. This is what makes you a wayseer. 90% of human civilization is populated with those whose brains are blocked to the way. Their brains are hardwired to enforce the social programming indoctrinated since birth. Unlike you, they cannot break out of this programming because they have not yet experienced the necessary revolution of mind. These programmed people take social institutions and rules very seriously. Society is full of games programmed to keep people's minds occupied so they will not revolt. These games often cause sick fixations on peculiar protocols, power structures, taboos, and domination, all subtle forms of human bondage. This distinct form of madness is not only tolerated by the masses, but insisted upon. The programmed ones believe in rules so forcefully, they become willing to destroy anyone who violates them. Wayseers are the ones who call their bluff. Since wayseer minds are free to reject social programming, wayseers readily see these social institutions for what they are, imaginary games. Wayseers comfort the disturbed, disturb the comfortable. Helping those who are lost in these games and refuse to help themselves is the calling of many wayseers. Since wayseers are the ones who keep contact with the original source of reality, they are able to disrupt societal conventions and even governments to realign humanity with the way. The wayseers are an ancient lineage, a kind of priesthood, carriers of the flame, ones in the know. There must always be wayseers to reform.
Was the Wayseers Manifesto. And you can find out more about this whole movement. It's been around for quite a while now. And you can go to wayseermanifesto.com. WAYSEER manifesto.com. And I have loved that song for quite a while. And I think it relates to all of us in a very special way. Those of us who certainly connect to this radio station and connect through a sense of spiritual being and calling to whatever that form of creative act is. It might be as a producer. We just had a group of beautiful young people here in the studio sharing their creative work. Those of you, when you call in, are always speaking about the wisdom that's coming through you. We each have it. And the real call is to be able to share it in whatever way we can. And there are some people who dedicate their entire lives to that sharing of the wisdom that flows through their consciousness, their being. And our predecessor in this time slot was one of those people, I would say, in a stellar way, Robert Knight from the program Earthwatch. So, welcome, Paulette.
Thank you, Kathy. Mm.
So you wanted to share a little something. You found out something new today.
Yes, indeed. I was listening to WBAI earlier today, and I was listening to the show Talk Back with John McDonough. And as a guest, he had Miss Liz Winstead on. And she, I understand, was one of the founders of Comedy Central, The Daily Show. And as we mentioned earlier, months ago, Robert had the good fortune to be on The Daily Show as a correspondent back in 1997. Mm-hmm. And indeed, in her comments today on the show, she highlighted the fact that Robert was indeed the very first African-American correspondent ever hired by Comedy Central's The Daily Show, which I thought was a really wonderful additional attribute to Robert that we can all celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. And even though, you know, we had that wonderful celebration of his life just a few weeks ago, you reminded me that today is also a very momentous day, anniversary, commemorative day. So why don't you let our listeners know about that?
Yes, it's roughly 12 months ago to the day that Robert transitioned.
Mm.
And so this has been a rather important period, I think, for all of us because of the tribute. But those of us who were closest to him, especially in the last days of his life, will always remember this day as something special.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. It was a really momentous, I was going to say struggle, but I don't know if that's the word for it. But it was a very momentous transition, and in some ways it was tragic, but in some way there was a beauty to it. And that's interesting, too.
Yeah, his spirit, the brightness of his spirit and the airiness of it, the lightness of it, was really quite evident
mm-hmm.
in him as being, I think, as you and I remember him.
Yeah.
And his happiness, his inner happiness, and his ability to remain clear-thinking, articulate, and full of wonderful humor and loving, as I've always known him.
Right, to the last
absolutely
moment of transition.
Yes.
Beautiful. So we're going to play a song. Paulette chose a song to play as a tribute in this moment, a momentous day. So we're going to do that right now. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
Just about the hour of midnight, I walked into power of the light and found that it hit me like a brick wall. Just about the hour of midnight, I walked inside the power of the light and caught sight of the future clear as a bell. Brighter, I make the future brighter, and I make a new way of thinking in the light. The deep moon leads to the veil of the stars. The night sky draws us nearer to the far, and the egg moon is shining so bright. It seems that the stars are the mirror of the sun, and so it may go that everything is one. Take a deep moon glimpse down into the microscope. It would be so bright when I find you dancing in the moonlight. The new wine is poured, baby, give me a glass. The starlight said, baby, lend me a hand. The moon didn't know and it doesn't give a damn. And everybody could be skinny-dipping in the moonlight tonight. Skinny-dipping in the moonlight, baby. Skinny-dipping.
WBAI New York. I'm Robert Knight, and this is Earthwatch.
Welcome back. You're listening to Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine in studio with Paulette. And that piece we just heard was Light of You by Emmer Kenny. And before that, we heard Skinny Dipping in the Moonlight. And I don't know who produced that song. Do you know who that is, Paulette?
Yes, they're called the Rocket Scientists.
The Rocket Scientists, right. And you said they were Russian.
They were Russian. Hmm. And Robert played this back in the 1990s, around 96, 97, while he was reporting on the Russian spaceship Mir. Hmm. And so this was pretty significant coming from Russian citizens to contribute to his show.
Nice. And the opening theme was Michelle and Diocello, Earth. And so we are here on Earth, and we are sharing this interesting world together, this interesting, ever-changing world. And I happen to be one who lives with a great deal of hope and expectation of this world getting better. Of you know, it's interesting when one ends up here at WBAI Radio or a place like this, either behind the microphone or listening over the air, it means that you're in a place in your life that is expectant and has some level of determination for changing for the better. Otherwise, what are we all doing here? I think many of the producers on this side of the mic have dedicated their whole lives to this process of informing and transforming the world, such as Robert Knight, such as Ilambe Brath is another person who gave his whole life to the work of educating and transforming the world. So I happen to believe that all of this energy and work and contribution does make a gradual difference. It's a little bit like the ocean eroding away the mountain. It may take a while, but the ocean eventually does prevail over the obstacles that are before it. So, you know, most of the time, in between the lows, I'm very hopeful and very encouraged and enthusiastic about what the world is and what we can do and how we can share with each other. And to me, that's really what makes it worthwhile. A lot of people are very focused on their career paths, and a lot of people are very focused on their bank accounts. And I could probably use a little bit more of that, I have to admit. But it's never really been my focus. And for me, the real experience of being alive is that human experience. When you're able to experience a person, you know, because life is transitory. And really, that's the thing to grasp, hold on to, and to be attentive to. It's the relationships that we have and the opportunity that we have to share our light with each other, as Emmer Kenny was saying. That's really, for me, what life is for. And, you know, when you get here, you realize, oh, no, I actually have to pay the bills, too. And so then we get caught up in the necessity of actually trying to figure out how to earn a living and buy some groceries and, you know, maybe get a train pass and all the things that we need to survive. But in the end, how meaningful is all that, other than the system is set up such that we need to do it to survive?
Yeah, you kind of have to go in one end and come out the other in order to sort of progress, I guess.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, even though I may qualify my statement sometimes by saying, well, you know, in other places things are happening. But I think one of the things that I definitely share with Robert, and I think you're the same way, is that at the core, we're optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
And there are obstacles, but humankind has endured many things and they're still here. And we still
a lot of people thought we weren't going to make it.
That's right.
But we've made it this far as a collective humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And while there are some, you know, recalcitrant lost souls, I think, that create a lot of chaos on the earth, still at the core of even those beings, they still have that spark of divine humanity within them. So for those of us who look upon it that way, even the worst that we see in the world, we have to find a way to integrate that without moving into a space of anger and hatred and retaliation of wanting to run after the bad guys. Because I remember, you know, it just brings back in my mind after the tragedy of September 11th when the Twin Towers came down, I can remember the energy in New York City was not hateful or retaliatory at all. In fact, it was almost as if people's hearts had been ripped open and there was this tenderness there that we were all sharing with each other in this shared experience. And the people who you wouldn't necessarily talk to were having conversations on the trains and in the streets and sharing that experience. And I remember it being thinking that, wow, you know, maybe out of this something good can arrive. And then came Bush.
Oh, God.
And he was like, you know what? I remember they gathered everybody at Yankee Stadium for some so-called memorial, and then they sat down and programmed people to do two things. Shop, because they wanted us to rebuild the economy, and to go to war. And then they after that, there was a lot of fermentation of retaliation and anger, and we have to go after the terrorists. And so the American people were whipped up into this fervor, and young people were joining the military in droves. Everybody wanted to avenge. And we went off to bomb Iraq, only to discover that that country had absolutely nothing to do with it, zero to do with it. And so, you know, countless harm was caused by this drive to retaliate. And it's unfortunate that there was this political manipulation going on where we were really just going there for oil and for resources and to take control and to have a base in the region so that those people who are controlling our government and our economy would have that. And so how many people suffered? How many young people went over there and died and were wounded? And how many young people there died and wounded? All for the retaliation of an act which, as I understand it, was simply orchestrated by a certain power elite, probably with corroboration on many sides, many countries. So my whole point being is that the only defense we really have as a humanity is to not allow ourselves to be led by the nose every time something happens, a tragedy happens. Because in truth, many of these tragic events are orchestrated, and it's just a way of manipulating and controlling us as beings and, you know, exploiting all of the world. So my, all of this to say, we have to keep hold of our own light and make sure that we know who we are and not allow our sanity to be hijacked by a consciousness, I'll put it that way, because it's not really the beings, it's a consciousness that would keep this world very dark. And I think that when enough of us do that and allow our creative power and our imagination to focus into what we actually want the world to be, that's when it will truly change. People really, all of us, have to create what that world that we want to have. Because, you know, we can't depend on And we can't really call upon people who are under the yoke of oppression to do it. You know, people who are hiding in their kitchens or under their houses or afraid to walk the streets are not going to be the ones who can reimagine a different world or who can stop these power brokers from being abusive. It's only people relatively affluent, which I think even the poorest of American is. In many of the Western countries, we're the ones that I think have to be called to put an end to violence and find a way to do it that's constructive and nonviolent. So it's a challenge, but I believe we're up to the task.
I agree with you, and I think that knowing and understanding what's beneath the surface is what gives you the knowledge and informed state of mind, mm-hmm. so that when you do decide, you know, how to go about doing what you're saying, mm-hmm. you do it in such a way that that's coming from a place of understanding and focus and sense of ethics.
That is key. A sense of ethics is very key. And, in a really nuts and bolts, human being, real world kind of way. I mean, I like to talk about karma and stuff like that, which is just basically what goes around comes around. But, you know, when people really make conscious choices and have ethics on how they treat other beings and how they demand to be respected and treated, I think is, you're right, that's really important.
And it's something that is, I think, exists in the ideal world on a sort of reciprocal kind of level, mm-hmm. where it's something that you would expect or would hope that the respect that is shown to you is something that you would return in kind. I don't know if we've gotten there yet. I'm hoping that somewhere in my lifetime I see that.
I think there are many people who are like that. I think the majority of people are like that. We all get lost from time to time, but at the core, there is the desire, the intent, the will to do really good in the world and to be good to each other. And I think that very often it's the stress of life that breaks people down and causes us to lose our way. I mean, if you're a head of a family and you've got children and you can't feed your kids, you know, you can't really think about much else. And so I think it's changing. I feel, on an energetic level, I feel a massive change. I really feel that the world is lighter. I feel the energies that I experience are much more gentle, much softer. They're loving, that are being able to get through. And it's not as much an oppressive, dark energy that I experience in my life. And I think a lot of it has to do with the inner work, but I think that there's a real transformation taking place. I'm not sure how long it will take, but there is a transformation. And I think that we're each called to contribute to that. By, like you said, with the ethics in our own behavior, but also for the sake of imagining the world as we want it to be, to allow our imagination and our creativity to build that energy. It becomes the fuel, like the fire under the pot to create something. So if the fire on the pot is all about hatred and negativity and anger, then what's being cooked and created is very heavy and very dark. But if the fire under the pot is the, you know, and I'm talking about spiritual fire, is one of creativity and brotherhood and friendship, then it does create the essence of that to flow into the society. So when we're doing something, it might seem small. So if you like are helping somebody on your street, you know, maybe there's an elderly person carrying a bag and you decide to carry the bag for them. So every time we do that kind of thing or open in a respect of another human being, even if it's just a smile, it's putting the light in the spiritual fire to create the fuel for transforming the world. And as more people do that, and as this dark fermenting energy will dissipate, and it will be a better place. But we have a responsibility each to contribute to that.
I agree with you.
But?
I wouldn't say but. And? And I would say that there are more than one level. There's the individual level, and then there's the level that you're speaking of earlier, which is the power brokers or the people who control media and their attempts to try and shape your reality through visual media, through social media in general. And I think what I was speaking to was more that side.
Mm-hmm.
I think absolutely on an individual level that there's something about human connectedness that, as we were saying last week, goes well beyond, you know, verbal mm-hmm. communication, where there's just you can feel someone and they can you can understand a lot about someone just being in the same room with them. You don't necessarily have to speak the same language, verbal language, but I'm speaking more on the level of the people who would pit us against other people.
Well, I'm actually speaking about that too.
Okay.
Because we have a choice of whether or not we're going to be pitted.
You're right.
And we have a choice of whether or not we're going to bathe our consciousness in violence through media. It's a personal choice.
Oh, I know.
And so the reason that the so-called power brokers can get away with it is because there's a massive level of cooperation and enjoyment of that media. And so that's what I mean by ultimately we have to make a personal choice that if we want the violence to stop in the world, that we have to stop engaging in violence on all levels. And so, for instance, if everyone decided, or enough of people decided, not to go to mindlessly violent movies, then they'll stop being made, because nobody's going to make a buck off of it. If we can teach our young people enough about the world politic that they don't join the military, we have an all-volunteer military at this point. So if young people ceased to join the military, it would have a significant impact. If we could begin to recognize that there are enough resources for everyone on the planet, I think part of the greatest purveyor of violence is fear of lack of having enough. And so we have people who straddle the lower economic class and are in the habit of calling themselves middle class, but there is no more middle class. But they're in the habit of calling, we're in the habit of saying we're middle class, but we're all very close to being impoverished. And so people are not recognizing that the system, the dynamic of the system that's putting it in place. And people have a tendency to create within their minds reasons to be fearful or to be judgmental of other people, and to say, well, I don't want that in my neighborhood. I don't want that person to be my friend. I think that that person is somehow bad because of how they look or where they come from. And so I think that's the kind of thing, when I say personal responsibility, that if as a population and as a humanity we ceased to cooperate with the systems that are enslaving us mentally, then they will cease to be.
I agree with you.
So that's what I mean by...
No, I totally
and all,
agree.
But all we can do really is handle our own self. We can
sure.
take responsibility for our contribution or lack thereof of contribution, and we can work to inform and to create things that might inspire people to do, to question what where they're at. But there isn't much we can personally do in terms of stopping the horrific abuses on the in the world, because it's you don't want to become them, like after the Iraq War, where we went over to bombing innocent people. It's kind of hard to know exactly what to do, I suppose. But if we can do it on our individual levels, and if everyone chose to do that, the world would be different tomorrow.
I agree with you.
The question is, is it going to happen? Well, it's, you know, I think it's happening. I do. I believe that's why I feel a significant change in the energy. It's an energetic thing. It's, but I see it and I feel it, and I see it reflected in people's faces. I see it reflected in the world in subtle ways, not so much huge ways, but in subtle ways I do see it. So I'm hopeful. Anyway, we've been yakking it up here for close to an hour, and not that there's anything wrong with that. I just want to open the door for you to join our yak session. If you want to call, the number here is 212-209-2900. You're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM on the radio dial, for those of you who still have radios. And you can find us on the internet at WBAI.org. And for those of you who have smartphones, if you go to our website, I believe you can download an app that will allow you to listen on your phone. And I think this is the wave of the future for many young people who are significantly attached to their phone devices. But the number here, if you want to call, if you do have a phone nearby, is 212-209-2900. I had a wonderful Sunday in the park. The weather was so glorious on Sunday. Did you get out?
No, not at all.
Oh, it was so amazing. I mean, it might have been nice on Saturday, but I didn't get out on Saturday.
I got out on Saturday.
I'm so used to being huddled into the house that I often miss these opportunities, and so it was so great. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling in.
Yes.
So is there a discussion or?
Well, we're talking about healing the world by healing ourselves.
Okay. Well, so. I'm just gonna start off that I am on my way back from the gym, and I had this heaviness in me, and I'm big into energy and healing, and I've been to, you know, classes and whatnot, and it's not whether it's true or not, it's the reality of the world, and it's just about acceptance and growth, but I feel consumed by, you know, my phone sometimes, and like what others think and everything, and I just heard myself on the radio, and it threw me off.
But, you have to turn off your radio.
Is that me right now? I'm sorry. Okay, so I guess I'm live.
You so are anyways, live. Yes.
I go to my higher power, my higher self, God, and I say to it, to me, to whatever the essence of the energy is, and I say, you know, get me out of this mindset. You know, get me out of the negativity of, you know, of social media and everything, and I go and I turn on my radio, and it's this talk show right now. Like, I believe in synchronicities that they happen all the time, and it's a beautiful thing. And it's once you realize little by little, like, what annoys you and what gets to you, the more you could polish your mirror, mm-hmm. and and reflect what you want into the world. I don't know. I'm just in awe right now that you guys just answered. This is too weird.
No. But what you're saying is very insightful, and it's a wonderful contribution to our conversation, because, you know, that's kind of what I'm talking about. At some point, we have to step away from those things that draw us into madness and reflect inward and just have a sense, you know, get connected to who we truly are. Because truly, at your core, you're a divine, sacred being. And if we can bring our attention to that, then that's what we reflect, and that becomes the gift we bring.
I think that we all have so many gifts, and it's like you said, it's just about tapping into them. And some people, you know, and I do believe that the vibration and the frequency is growing, and there's a collective consciousness that is evolving, you know, as mm-hmm. you know, as well as parallel our technology is. So it's hard to stay center and keep that inner silence, while on the other hand, you know,
mm-hmm. all this other stuff. But there is another way to look at it as well, you know, like all the technology and the social media. In some ways, it's preparing our evolutionary process for being able to be psychically connected.
And so
I see it a lot in young people, where they're always connected to their collective consciousness. And I just think that's a precursor to being able to put down the phones and the technology and just do it from mind to mind. So think of it in terms of that's, I think that's really its divine purpose.
I see that, and if it bothers me, I'm trying to look inward and be like, well, why does that, you know, like what is the true, what is the root of, why does that bother me? Is it the role I play? Is it the image I give off? You know, what is not pure inside of me that I can change, you know?
Well, I want you to keep in mind that everything inside of you is quite pure, but the dissonance is the interface between your divinity and the outside world. So your young people especially tend to live for the reflection, for the peers, for the acceptance, and to be loved from the outside. And so the thing is to recognize that inside you are all the love that you need. And so it's not that you don't engage in the outside world, you just don't look for yourself in that.
Okay. I like that. I'm just soaking this in.
Okay.
It's fascinating. I'm forever fascinated. But I have to tune in more. And the more that I want to tune in, the more there's like this urgency, the more I see synchronicities, the more it you know, my eyes are open to it. And it's like it's an ongoing gift. You know?
Right. Yeah. So. Cool. Well, thank you so much for calling. Call again.
Thank you so much. I definitely will. You have a great night.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. We have another caller standing by. Hello. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Oh, well, I was wondering why people always, like, demonize the color black. They always say the dark side. I know I have a good side and, like, a not-so-good side. But I never knew I had a dark side.
Well, that's a good point. That's a very good point. I understand where you're coming from. I'm using common vernacular of, because actually the dark is also quite sacred. If you look at it from the perspective of true divinity, everything flows out of the darkness. The womb, inside the womb, is a dark space, and life comes from that. So it's really just a laziness of language, I would say.
Yeah, but not only that, that's why I start watching TV also, because, like, everything of that so-called blackness is bad. Like, if the guy wear the white hat, you know, and the bad guy always seems black. Well, and that has, like, a subliminal effect on people. Even to this day, they're still doing it. They raise the kids in cartoons, they see, right now. And people wonder why they are afraid of the so-called
I think when you start looking at this reflection within the media, this is a purposeful thing. So, I mean, you know, I was actually born in the 50s, so that's, I'm telling my age. I was born in the 50s. And when I was growing up, I didn't have a black doll. I only had little white dolls, which is nothing wrong with it, except that it didn't reflect back to me the beauty of my skin color. It didn't reflect back to me the beauty of who I am. And everything in our culture, especially American culture, is tinged with that that programming that would convince people who have brown skin that they're somehow less, and yeah, reinforce that if you don't have brown skin, if you have lighter skin or white skin, that you're somehow superior. And it's not a reflection of the truth. It harms both whites and blacks, and it is programming. And I think that the answer is not to be found in the medium that is designed for that purpose. So it's almost as if to just, like you said, turn it off, pay no attention to it, and focus on the truth of your being. I mean, that has always been my solution. Because what it does, not only does it teach people that they're somehow inferior, or at least it tries to, it also engenders hatred from both sides and resentments. And so it's just designed to create a web and a cycle of negativity and violence and hatred and pitting humanity one against the other. And so we just have to not accept it. That's all I can say.
That's the one thing. I understand it. That's like the Willie Lynch syndrome, I call it, you know, which is still taking effect to this day.
Yeah, it does, but we have to educate each other, bring it to each other's attention, like your call is doing, and move forward and not allow it. It's like an anvil dragging us into the abyss of evil. So we have to disentangle ourselves from this and move forward.
Yeah, because you know why I say that? Because the most powerful thing on this earth is black, the black hole. And you look at the sky, there's a billion stars up there, but yet it can't light up that sky.
Well, yeah, and truthfully, the energy that we're looking up into in the sky is not just an absence of light. It's actually the creative particles of the universe. So it's dark matter. And so what happens is that actually the founding substance of all existence. So like, that's why I liken it to a womb, because creativity is formed out of the darkness. So we have been programmed to look at things in a backwards way. All right, I want to thank you. I want to go to our next caller as we run out of time. Thank you.
You have a beautiful day.
You too. Bye bye. All right. Bye bye.
And one love.
Same.
Bye
bye. Bye. Okay, and let's go to our next caller. Hello, you're on the air. You're live on the air. Are you with us?
Yes, Hotep. I need a few seconds because I wanted to hear the previous caller to turn down the radio. Hold on.
You're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. You know, that's interesting. Last week, one of our callers was like, oh, I have to finish listening to the song. Keep playing it. I'll come on afterwards. It was really great. Hello, you're on the air?
Yes. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes, I've been doing some things, but I've been hearing quite a bit of the conversation. And I have, a couple comments. I want to share. I was listening to a program called The Power Hour, and Gary Franchi is filling in for Joyce Rowley. And they had on a guest, and I just heard some of this particular conversation. Catherine Fitz Austin, I know Robert Knight used to bring her in when he was with us. And she's
a financial planner. Yeah, go ahead.
She's with Solari.com, that's right. And what she was talking about is, and I want to connect it to what you guys were talking about earlier, in terms of the social media climate, and she was focusing on this Common Core. So she is a financial planner and used to be as a deputy with in the housing department, HUD, at the feds, and, you know, expose a lot of that corruption there. But she was saying that this Common Core curriculum is one of the most darkest things. And she was saying, it's hard to grasp this, but she's saying that it's even darker. And, you know, we use that language term, although it's not the best, to mean something real shadowy, than even pedophilia, which is hard to imagine. But she said that it's basically a way where the intelligence services, along with the monopolist corporations, track the kids basically from cradle to grave, so they have all the relational data. And all of this ties into the, you know, you're talking about the smartphones and, you know, all these seemingly wonderful devices that we can barely pull ourselves away from. But it's actually 1984 Big Brother Redux. So that's, you know, I'm still trying to think about this, but, you know, maybe people can go on the GCN, the Genesis Communications Network Live, and hear the program, the Power Hour from earlier today. I'm going to try to re-listen at some point to hear, because she is powerful, and Robert Knight brought her to the fore at WBAI. Very interesting guest. But the other thing I want to bring up in a more positive mode is at 5 a.m. this morning, or I guess it would have been yesterday morning, for all the night owls out there, BAI played something called Alternative Radio. I just more recently heard it on BAI at 5 a.m. And they have some excellent programs. They brought on Cornel West in Seattle, and the name of his talk was Love and Justice. Very, very powerful, because it seems that some of the problems that you're touching on is a lack, and he said this over and over in different ways: honesty, integrity, decency, and virtue. And I mean, the brother, and of course he brought in all his musical images and how virtuous our musical artists are, how he tied that to that. But he made one statement where he said, justice is love made public, and tenderness is love in private. So,
oh, that's, wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I'll listen and I'll continue. I love when you
I'll
take callers
to check
and I hear
out.
Our community. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye, you're welcome. Yeah, you know, the whole NSA thing, I just decided not to worry about it, because all of our lives are an open book and there's nothing we can do about it at this point. And, you know, because Facebook was created by the NSA, right? And but the thing is to not carry the fear, because the whole objective in the end is to make fear out of these revelations. So if we take it in stride and say, okay, so there is a warehouse somewhere in the bowels of power broker heaven that has a database on every human being and knows every single solitary thing we've done and who we've spoken to, but what they don't know is your heart, what they don't know is your sense of integrity, and they don't know truly who you are as a being. So I say the best protest to this kind of behavior is to not fear it. Oh, well, whatever. Knock yourself out. Spy on me. What are you going to do?
Well,
I think it's a done deal. There's nothing we can do. So I decided, why be afraid?
Yeah, I
oh no, I just you hung up just as I was about to punch down the button for that call who was holding on. Sorry, I missed your contribution. But the number here is 212-209-2900. No, I really think that there is no privacy anymore. We've gone way beyond 1984, the book.
I think so too. And I think that and my harken back to what Robert would talk about all the time with the NSA. For him, understanding and deconstructing was a way to conquer any fears.
Mm.
So once you understand what you're looking at, and you know how it works. And if you're the one who's financing a lot of this, his righteous anger sort of came through, and it was through that knowledge and through the evidence behind his analysis that you got rid of your fear.
Yeah. But I guess I'm going to punch down this next caller, so please turn off your radio. It's probably not a good word, punch down. It's a little button. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Yes.
Cousin.
How are you?
Yes, I'm calling just to speak a little bit about something that was interesting that I heard. This is Professor Riven, and I drive my cab at night a lot of times, and I had two people that were talking about the shooting of the man who got shot in the back.
Mm-hmm.
It was two African-American ladies, older and kind of Southern background. And one was like, oh, that was terrible. How did he shot that man in the back? And the other one was saying, you know what? What was he running for? He says, where was he running to? I mean, he was just going to jump out of his car and start running, and then just thought that he was just going to go somewhere. I mean, what was his, I don't know. For some reason, it just the two-sided perspective of the observation just struck me. I was saying, which one, because naturally my heart felt with the first one who was talking and saying how terrible it was that this cop would just shoot somebody in the back like that, But at the same time, when I heard the other side of the coin, it didn't make me say, what's wrong with you, lady? Why don't you shut up? What are you, crazy? What? I don't know. It struck me as though that's just another side of the coin.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily not make any sense whatsoever. It's like, it was part of the equation.
Well, yeah, and
I don't know what to, I don't know. I was trying to figure out what to make of that in my head. That's what it's.
Well, I think what you were listening to is wisdom in a sense. We're going to feel the outrage of the policeman shooting this man, this human being in the back. But if you pull it back to the question of the second woman, why was he running? There had to be, at some point, a sense of fear in that person to make him run. To have him take off and run, he had to be afraid of something, I would think.
Yeah.
And so the question is a good one, because it reflects to an important understanding and survival tool that all black men need, most black people need, and I would say all people need to at least reflect on, is are you responding to the stimuli that is like a trap? It's like a bear trap. Mm-hmm. They put a piece of meat in the bear trap, the bear goes and gets his foot caught. So all this negativity and fear-based thinking is poured into our consciousness, but it's a trap. And so when you respond to it, you jump into their trap and they got you. And so this is why there's a benefit to the practices of being calm, being reflective, meditating, and not being reactive to things. So let's say even if you did something wrong, so maybe the guy in the car was smoking a weed, a joint or something, and freaked out, panicked.
I think part of it was that he hadn't paid his child support. And he knew that a warrant was coming back on him, or a warrant came back saying
okay.
that.
So they were going to pick him up for something.
Yeah.
When
he sort of got that impression, then he said, I'm just going to make a break for it or something. Like
yeah.
That. I think that. Yeah.
Well, so he fell into a multiple plentitude of traps, and panicked and ran. And so so the system is set up in such a way to entrap people, and so the only and this is why I'm saying it's the individual choices that are most powerful, because even if this was the case, if he could have been self-reflective enough to say, okay, well, maybe it's just time for me to face this problem. Mm. Let me deal with it instead of running from it in fear. Then, you know, so that he would have been in control of the situation. But when he reacted to the stimuli, he fell into the trap and lost control of the situation. It's the same thing with that other killing. I forget the gentleman's name in, I think it was a Staten Island, where the police came, said he was selling cigarettes or something.
Yeah,
and he was like, you know, this stops here. I'm not putting up with this anymore. Yeah, the moment he moved into a reactive behavior, it gave them the stimuli they needed to escalate.
Right, and it was sort of a catch-22, because which we've heard that he had already like made a complaint about the cops doing that to him before, harassing him.
Right,
and so when they came in on the scene, they said, "Oh, here you go.
We're going to get you." So we could have a sense of outrage about this problem with the police force. It's a real problem. There are real bad seeds. There are, you know, toxic policies. They are engaging in warfare in the community, the black community especially, but in many communities. So we need to recognize that we're at the situation we're in. And so this woman, to me, is reflecting that side of the equation, that when we are reactive, we are surrendering our power and falling into the trap that's being set for us. Now, granted, the cop could shoot you anyway, right? But at least there's a window of being able to extract yourself from that situation.
Right. Since I'm driving a lot and stuff like that, I'll get stopped by somebody, and I'm always and some people say, oh, why are you going to treat those cops like they're, you know? I was, oh, okay, yes, officer, what are you doing? What is it and stuff like that, and It's not because, like, you know, I'm trying to, you know, kiss their butt or anything. It's like, it's, you know, it's just like, I don't really have any fear of what it is, because exactly what you're saying. I really don't have any fear of what they're going to actually do to me, because I haven't killed anybody. I haven't robbed a bank. I haven't, you know, I haven't done anything. I mean, now, just like you say, anything can happen. But if I'm not even thinking in that direction, then I always feel that I don't have to respond from that direction, because I'm not thinking in that direction.
Well,
like,
you know, it's a very good thing, and what you're speaking of has two sides to it as well, because on the one hand, you know that you didn't do anything wrong, so what do you have to worry about? But the other side of the coin is that what we project is what we attract. Mm-hmm. So if you're walking around fearful, it's sort of like a dog can smell that you're afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Cops are like that too.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and people who are steeped in that power game are like that. So they know and recognize people who are afraid and will zoom in on it. So if you're walking around not afraid, you're less likely to be a focus of attention in that regard, because these people are feeding off of your fear. So the more they can make you fearful, the bigger they feel as human beings. It's really a reflection of insecurity, but they feel bigger because you're fearful. But if you're not afraid, then they're not getting anything out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you're not attracting them to you. So it has a power on two levels when you walk around without fear.
Very insightful. I really appreciate your answer. Mm-hmm. That's something I was just reflecting on. So very, you know, very insightful. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for calling. Call again. And we have another caller about to come in, but it may be our last call because we're running out of time. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you are live on the air.
Oh. Hello, good evening.
Good evening. Good morning.
I just wanted to, a gentleman called and talked about, or asked a question about black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to, make just a few comments about that.
Okay.
When I was in sociology class, my teacher illustrated to us that before the time of the Roman Empire, as far as tools and other devices, gloves and swords and things that the clubs that they found pretty much around the world that 50% of the population was left-handed and 50% of the population was right-handed.
Oh, interesting.
And then when the Romans came in, because they were, to put it in quotations, efficient, when they made their devices and their tools for the people that worked for them, i.e. slaves, I'll just say non-Roman citizens, but most of the people that lived in Rome, in the city of Rome, were slaves. They forced everyone to use right-handed tools because it was more efficient for them to make one set instead of two sets.
Okay.
And the word for right-handedness in Latin is dexter, and the word for left-handedness is sinister.
Sinister, yeah.
So interesting. I didn't know that.
So therefore, anything that was right-handed, male, light, that is to say visible light, things in front, on top, are all associated with dexterity or dexter, and the things that are left, black, female, bottom, and back were, by the definition of the words, associated with sinisterness or inappropriateness, which eventually filtered into our culture as negative. But that's the universal root of it.
That is really interesting. I don't know if it's the universal root, but it's certainly...
Well, I mean, universal, not cosmically universal, but mm-hmm. I mean, it eventually took over as that train of thought and those type of governances and maintenances spread.
Yeah. That's I think we're still living in the Roman Empire, actually.
We actually are. I mean, we're an empire state.
Yeah, we're entirely still living in that empire. Well,
sure,
very.
I just wanted to make one more comment about light, and that is that when you look at the electromagnetic spectrum, we see that thing in the middle, which is called visible light, and that's a spectrum of the colors from violet down to red. Well, if you look at the whole spectrum, I mean, that is to say, if you look at a chart, it will break it down that there are actually 80 octaves of light or color, and that humans only see one, insects see other than the visible light spectrum, and cats see 5 octaves of color.
Mm-hmm.
So even in the darkness, there's very much color going on. I just wanted to make those comments.
Well, that's beautiful. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much for your call.
Sure, thank you. And I've met you before, and you keep up the good work, and you too, Paulette.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Enjoy your evening.
Mm-hmm, bye-bye. Very interesting. Well, I know that my cats can see spirits,
because
they're always relating to them. You know, they see the lights, and then they, you know, I can see them following with their eyes the movements of energies in the room. And,
wow.
And, you know, so sometimes I'll just sit and stare at them. And it's interesting because cats see, they see a lot. They do see a lot. And they can see more of us than we're aware of. You know, they can tell your mood by your energy and the colors that they see around you.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't know if dogs can see that. Dogs have a different kind of sensibility, I think. I'm not sure if they see it. They might hear it, though. I'm not sure. But animals are much more perceptive than humans, that's for sure. Humans are pretty dumbed down. I mean, even just our biology makes us dumbed down from what's possible. And then we have all this other programming on top of it, so we're just flailing in the dark, I guess.
I don't know if I completely agree with you there. I think that at our if I'm following what you've been saying all along, that although we don't have the whole spectrum of, you know, the different light and so forth, I think that at the core, we're very perceptive.
Yeah,
extremely perceptive.
Yeah, I think our vehicle of perception is our heart.
Yes.
The mind of the heart can perceive anything.
Yes.
Doesn't have to see it, hear it. We just have a knowingness.
Yes. It's a certain intuition.
Yeah, yeah. So true. Well, we're running out of time for today. I have no CDs. The thing is saying error capacity. I forgot to change the CD. For those of you who would like to find out more about the work that we're doing here and the work that specifically I do, you can go to one of the websites, heartofmineradio.com, to find out more about this and other broadcasts and changing schedules. It may not be there yet, but it will be. I mean the info. If you're interested in finding out about meditation and healing, you can go to qigongonline.net. Qigong is spelled with a Q, Qigong, qigongonline.net. I do offer meditation classes at my healing space in Brooklyn. Happen to have one coming up on Saturday at 1 o'clock. You can find out more by either going to the website, qigongonline.net. You could also leave a message at 347-480-1694 if you want more information about all of that healing work. And actually soon, in May, I'll be at the Bronx Museum.
Yes, indeed.
We're going to be talking about it, I think, a week from Monday on the 1 o'clock show. And so we'll bring more information to you here as well. They're doing a whole program on health at the Bronx Museum, and I think it'll be really exciting for people. It's going to take place, I believe, at least over a month with a different person every week, mm-hmm. offering some form of healing, relaxation mm-hmm. technique. So we'll talk more about that later. And I am grateful to be able to participate in that. I want you to stay tuned. Coming up at 1:30 is Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. I'm Catherine, and my co-host is
Paulette Spencer.
All right, and we'll be around. And for those of you who are you still communicating with people at all, or do you want to give out any information or anything for people to communicate with you?
Well, if you have any comments or well wishes or anything that you want to say about what we do, you can always drop me a line at Robert's former email, which is thenightreport@gmail.com. That's the night, K-N-I-G-H-T, report@gmail.com. And one last thing. A few weeks ago at this tribute, one of the listeners, and I don't remember her name, came up to me afterwards and handed me this beautiful present, beautifully wrapped, and she knows what was in it. And I just wanted to say thank you, even though I don't remember your name. The lady was there, I think, with her husband, mm-hmm. and just offered me this, and it was really quite a... it really moved my heart when I opened it, and so I just wanted to say thank you if you're listening.
Beautiful. And we want you to stay tuned. You're tuned to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Catherine, and you can email heartofmindradio@gmail.com. Or call and leave a message at 347-480-1694. Or you can go to the website qigongonline.net. Have a wonderful week. I invite you to join me on Friday morning, 10 a.m. at prn.fm for a rendition of Heart of Mind Radio. It's different than the one you hear on Mondays here at WBAI. And tune in next Wednesday at midnight for Earth at Midnight with Catherine and Paulette. Stay tuned. Mm-hmm.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and, yes, the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With me this morning, Sam J. Miller, no longer just Shirley Jackson award-winning Sam J. Miller, but also Nebula nominated. Oh, his name's getting too long. Sam Miller is here. Stay tuned. Well, it's not supposed to play that twice in a row, now is it? It's supposed to neatly segue into the movie review. So, instead, we will unneatly segue into the movie
review. I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. The new film, The Reconstruction of William Zero, is about cloning. Not that we're supposed to know that at the beginning. The distributors are playing it cagey with their description, and they want us to think that at the start, the main character William, played in all incarnations by Connell Byrne, is being tended to by his twin brother after a car accident. Even if our first sight of the incapacitated man didn't have him hooked into some kind of virtual reality rig, the fact that we know going in that this is a science fiction slash horror film and that William is involved in some kind of high-stakes work for a powerful genetics corporation would tip director Dan Bush's hand from the get-go. I'm not blowing any big spoilers here. If I can figure it out, pretty much anyone with a fair knowledge of SF genres can. The backstory is that 4 years previous, William Blakely accidentally killed his young son in a car accident. His wife, played by Amy Simetz, has left him as a result, and he now lives alone, save for his recently spawned and still rather vulnerable copy. But a release from loneliness isn't the only reason why William has duplicated himself. There are others, one of which you can figure out without much thought, but also a few more that come as a bit of a surprise, so I won't blow them here. Cloning stories have a tendency to open up several cans of worms, both practically and morally. Not as complex as time travel stories, maybe, but the issues can still be daunting. If you commit murder, is your exact clone culpable as well? If your clone makes love to your wife and she knows about it, is it cheating? If she doesn't, is it rape? Director Bush, who co-wrote the film with his star and producing partner Byrne, folds such events into the story but doesn't seem to want to engage the more sticky moral quandaries that attach to them. In Bush's and Byrne's defense, they have other issues they want to address, and you can't do everything. But the fact that the questions still bugged me means that I wasn't particularly engaged enough in the filmmaker's concerns to abandon my own. There were several roadblocks that kept me from getting there. Connell Byrne is quite good in his various incarnations of William Blakely. I'm not sure if that name is meant to somehow reference William Blake. Maybe we're looking at things from both an innocent and an experienced viewpoint, but that's where my knowledge of the poet ends, so I could be missing something there. In any case, Byrne does manage to portray distinctive personalities for each incarnation of William that still clearly draw a connection to one person, yet Byrne never really gets me to sympathize with any one of those versions, even the one you're supposed to feel empathy for. Meanwhile, Bush's sequencing of the film at times makes it feel more like we're watching a fractured timeline than two characters experiencing concurrent events. And for all the bigger themes that Bush and Byrne want to address, they keep pulling themselves back to some well-worn plot contrivances, including the big bad genetics corp with its own shadowy law unto itself security arm, and introducing a couple of poorly motivated interlopers into William's world, because there needs to be some sort of body count, doesn't there? No, there doesn't. And while these things keep the scope of the film from shrinking down to just two men in a house, they feel more like distractions. I do appreciate The Reconstruction of William Zero for using the idea of cloning to tell a different kind of emotional story, and at times the film's exploration of the persistence of guilt and the question of how far one can move beyond tragedy before a different kind of pain is inflicted can be quite affecting. Bush's and Byrne's goals for The Reconstruction of William Zero are admirable. A bit more work needed to be done on the execution. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are archiving these reviews over at my Mighty Movie Podcast website, so check out what you missed over at mightymoviepodcast.com.
Well, the CFQ may have changed, but the .com keeps booming along. This is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifico radio, vibrating 99.5 million times every second, or broadcasting at 99.5 FM. They mean the same thing, unless, of course, you're listening via the internet over WBAI.org, or you're listening to the download version of the show after it's broadcast, in which case, welcome to the past. But it is Thursday, April 16th, which would be Margot Adler's birthday. She would be 68 today had she survived. See, I open your mic and we can hear WHCR next door. Could you point the mic a little more toward you?
Sure.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that.
All right. If you like it, sounds. I love it.
Yeah, no, it's like moving things along. I'm about to go into a whole bunch of announcements. But first, our guest this morning is Sam J. Miller, who I hope steady listeners to Hour of the Wolf have heard. This would be, what, your fourth show?
Third or fourth.
Well, you were first on with Jen Brissett.
That's correct.
Who is now, her first novel has been doing wonderfully, Elysium.
Yep.
Published by Aqueduct Press.
Philip K. Dick Award nominee.
Yeah. And James Tiptree Jr., honorarium,
something
like
citation,
that. Tribute,
something.
Citation, tribute. Good book, people. That's all we have to say. It's a good book. You should darn well read it.
Which I read with her at NERSIF, and she read from that as well.
That's right.
And it was phenomenal.
That's right. An early version, a pre-pub version. And
I was on in February of last year with Tempest to promote the Electric Velocipede Memorial service.
Yes, the name of which I still objected to, because why should it be a memorial? A tribute, fine.
All
but
those things.
It's not dead, John. It's not dead. You don't know what you're going